Yesterday, President Obama sent his $3.9 trillion budget to Congress. It's being called a populist wish list by the New York Times.
And tempers erupted this morning at a congressional hearing on the alleged IRS targeting of Tea Party groups.
Also, hours later, the Senate rejected its first nominee from President Obama since they changed their approval rules last November.
Joining us now is Paul Singer, politics and Congress editor at USA Today. He joins us every Wednesday at this time. Paul, welcome back.
How you doing, Veronica?
Pretty well. So before we get to President Obama's budget, and from what I understand, there was some shouting, some tempers going on in Congress this morning after a former IRS official pleaded the fifth on questions about the IRS targeting Tea Party groups. Fill us in on what happened.
Well, the deal was this is the official at the sort of center of this branch of the IRS that oversaw tax-exempt organizations. And as your listeners no doubt remember, the big scandal erupted last year when they admitted that they had delayed tax-exempt status for a bunch of political groups, most of which had Tea Party or something like it in their name. And a year ago, this woman, Lois Lerner, took the fifth and said she wasn't going to testify on Capitol Hill at a hearing because she might incriminate herself. The problem was, she then answered a question, one question in that hearing, when they said, well, is this a real document? She said, that's my understanding of this real document, but I'm not testifying. The committee believes that when she answered that one question, she waived her rights to say that she wouldn't answer questions. So they called her back today and marched her through it again, and she answered it to every question. I will not answer questions. I will not answer questions. And the committee, basically the chairman, Daryl Issa, slams the gavel and says, okay, fine, we're not getting anywhere. We're going to close this hearing and we're going to end the hearing and we'll talk about contempt proceedings. Meanwhile, the Democrats said, hey, wait, we want to talk. But the chairman said, never mind, we're done here. And the Republicans all got up and started to leave the room. So the Democrats start chanting, shame, 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 mm-hmm. Let us talk. You know, this is political theater at its best. It was a circus. Ultimately, we learned absolutely nothing more about the Tea Party scandal than we knew yesterday, but it was fun to watch.
So Republicans are saying that to them, she waived her right to plead the fifth, even though she's pleading the fifth again. She's not answering questions. Is there a mechanism in place in Congress that can force her to testify?
Yeah, they could try to bring her up on charges of contempt of Congress, which, you know, that becomes actually a criminal proceeding at some point. It's hard to do. It would require, you know, the committee to vote on those charges and move from there. You know, what's interesting here is that the lawyer, after this hearing was over, her lawyer said, look, we were trying to negotiate a deal with the Republicans by which we would testify, but our sense was in the end it was simply a ploy to vilify us on television. And so I advised my client to instead repeat her Fifth Amendment rights. Really interesting.
What kind of line is Lois Lerner walking right now as far as testifying goes?
Well, you know, it's a tough legal question, right? I mean, she's no longer in the government. She's a private citizen now. And she is saying that she puts herself in jeopardy. There are other investigations, including, I believe, FBI investigations of exactly what went on. Lois Lerner has also had threats against her, personal threats against her, once her name became public. You know, she's in a very tenuous position all around, and it does not necessarily do her any good. And certainly her lawyer would tell you this. Doesn't do her any good to go sit in front of Congress and let them treat her like a piñata in front of the cameras.
Is the hope from the GOP that she will be forced to testify and that her words will somehow implicate the White House?
Probably. I mean, I don't mean to put intention in their minds. I think part of their intention is to keep this story alive. Clearly, Republicans believe that this was a White House orchestrated effort to punish the political opponents of the Obama administration. The White House and the Democrats would tell you that that is absurd. It was a bureaucratic bungling, of course, but not in any way motivated from the White House. I think to some degree, the Republicans are looking for testimony that would help make their case, but they're also, you know, an event like today was unnecessary. The only reason to really do it is to bring this story back up into the press.
So Republicans say that they're going to talk contempt charges. They adjourned, sounds like, and that's what they said they were going to be talking about. How soon could something like that happen?
I don't really know. And my suspicion is now we go back to, you know, remember this second appearance before the committee took almost a year to materialize. This could go on for a while. My suspicion is they'll have some more negotiations with the lawyer and see if they can work something out. Maybe they'll try to go for contempt proceedings sometime, you know, in a few months. I just don't know the timing of it.
Well, let's move on to President Obama's budget, which he sent yesterday. It's a $3.5 trillion plan. The New York Times called it a populist witch list. What are some of the major things that he's asking for?
Well, you know, he's asking for an expansion of the earned income tax credit for more lower income people to be able to take advantage of that. He's looking for a major investment in early childhood education and some workforce investment kind of things. He is looking to cap some corporate tax rates, close some corporate loopholes, tax loopholes. He at one point or another had talked about possibly changing the way Social Security cost of living adjustments are made in order to save a little money. That went out the window this year. But, you know, this is all a theoretical exercise. This is now a political document, not a budget document. I mean, it's not, no one expects this to be implemented. They've already got a budget agreement for this year and next year based on the deal that Congress struck earlier this year. So this is really just an opportunity for the president to say, this is my agenda, this is the Democratic agenda, this is what we believe in, never mind whether it actually ever gets implemented.
And apparently there was some pressure on him to submit a budget just like this, and from the looks of what he submitted, he's blowing past any conciliatory checkpoints, and it seems as though what he's asking for, and what he said he's asking for, is to signal a budget that favors upward mobility and the middle class. But could any of this actually get through Congress?
Well, you know, you can't necessarily blame him for blowing past any sense of sort of bipartisan cooperation, because there was really no format in which there was going to be a discussion anyway. There's no place to go to have that conversation. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, the White House said, look, we don't have a debate partner, a dance partner, I think they called it, on deficit issues. We'd like to have a sort of a broader discussion about entitlements and sort of long-term spending and stuff, but we just don't. There's no way to get at it because the Republicans don't really want to talk about it, and frankly, at the moment, I don't think the Democrats do either. Everybody is happier just doing sort of posturing. So yeah, I mean, there actually are some things in here that they could agree on. I mean, I think they're, Dave Camp, the Ways and Means Committee chairman, today was talking about the tax plan that he likes, and some of that does actually match up with the president's, lowering some of the top tax rates, maybe not so much, but cutting some of the corporate loopholes they could probably agree on. Even expanding the earned income tax credit they might be able to agree on. So, you know, there are bits and pieces of this that could be bipartisan, but there's just no format in which to have that discussion at this point.
So you call this a political document at this point, and I think the New York Times wrote that it could actually be, a campaigning document. That's what it could be used for at this point. So what could its potential impact be?
Well, I mean, budgetarily, nothing. But in the campaign circumstance, this is where Democrats get to go up and say, the Republicans want to shut down your government, want to give away tax breaks to the rich. Democrats want to do this stuff. Democrats want to, expand government support for education. We want to expand tax credits for the poor. We want to crack down on corporations. So, it's hard to know what the impact on that is because, we don't know the outcome of these elections, but the impact, if nothing else, is this becomes our talking point. This becomes our agenda item.
And let's move on to one last thing before we let you go today. President Obama was blocked by the Senate earlier today when his nominee to head the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice was rejected by the Senate.
Yep.
And I wonder if you could talk us through what happened with that rejection.
Yeah, very interesting, in fact. The Democrats knew this was going to be a close vote on this guy whose name is Debo Degbola. They knew it was going to be a close vote because Degbola, no one doubts he's a very qualified civil rights lawyer. But a few years ago, he got involved in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, who mm-hmm. may be familiar to some of your listeners. Free Mumia movement has rattled among the left wing for 30 years. He is a black activist who was convicted of killing a police officer in Philadelphia in 1980-something, 81, I think. And he's been in jail, and he's on death row. And Adegbole was part of a team that convinced the courts to commute his sentence from death to life in prison. And law enforcement groups and a lot of Republicans are furious and have always been furious and believe that this is injustice for a police officer, basically. So they mounted a campaign against Adegbole, and they won. The Democrats knew it was going to be close. They had Joe Biden in the chair presiding over this vote to cast the tie-breaking vote if it got there, but they were still a vote short, and they couldn't even get to a tie. And so
they must have known this was going to be an issue. They vet their candidates thoroughly. They just thought they had the numbers to push it through, it sounds like.
And I think people underestimated the backlash this would create, including among Democrats, and particularly Democrats from the Pennsylvania area. I mean, the two of the Democrats who were critical here were Casey, who's a Pennsylvania senator, and Coons, who's a Delaware senator who's right nearby. They had no choice because the movement around Philadelphia suburbs particularly is so strong.
All right, and we'll leave it there. Paul, thank you so much for joining us, as always.
My pleasure, Veronica. We'll talk to you again.
We've been talking to Paul Singer, politics and Congress editor at USA Today. He joins us every week at this time to share the ins and outs of the United States Congress.